Once more, it's the Smith Baker Show here on AM 850 KFUO. Good afternoon, Pastor Smith.
Hi, Tom. The Smith Baker Show.
Yes. That way, when it goes wrong, you get blamed because you're at the beginning of the show.
I get top title, huh?
You get top title. That's absolutely correct. In fact, you know, today we are going to be dealing with Esau forgiving Jacob on this Tuesday, September the 6th. It's a Sunday school lesson in a lot of churches that use Concordia Publishing materials, but even if you don't use them or don't go to Sunday school, you may have some children, for example, that you want to tell this to. So we're going to kind of give you some insights. But so far, how's your week going?
Very good. Very good. Tom had a good weekend. Enjoy the fall-like weather we have.
Guess who's going up to Pilot Knob this Sunday to preach for their big anniversary?
Oh, great. I love that congregation up there.
Yeah, I
great
do too.
Great congregation. Historic congregation.
Yes, yes. I was at another one, St. Paul de Pere, this past week.
Uh-huh.
And I had played a CD last week. I had gotten it for free, you know, at the store.
Yeah.
People give me clothing, CDs, books. And I thought it was really good. I kept playing it, and then I played it on the radio and came to find out that it's done by a somebody who's really a strong supporter of KFUO.
Who's that?
Joan Bogus.
Oh, really?
Yes. And, in fact, the person who helped edit it was Professor Schriever.
Oh, huh.
You know, so I went and visited him in Red Bud last week, and he's writing the Exodus commentary, and he gave me some chapters to kind of look it over ahead of time. I especially wanted the one on Exodus 20 because of my understanding that the commandments are not imperatives. And he said I was correct, they're imperfects, which means it's not, this is how you get me to be your God if you do these things. But rather, I am your God, therefore you will automatically do these things. It's just the very opposite of how people think. And, yeah, he really kind of agreed with me on that kind of thing.
But getting back now to Pilot Knob, now what's the occasion down there?
It's their big anniversary, 150.
Oh, of the battle? The congregation.
The church. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, that battle served as the Union Hospital during the Battle of Pilot Knob.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
you'd actually see the bloodstains in the floorboards.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they took me to see that, and I found that very interesting. I thought we'd start off on a little humorous note. Not that we won't get to the Sunday school lesson, but, you know, we're trying to be as clear as we can here on Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod-supported KFUO radio. But from my emails, a lot of times people think I'm saying another thing than what I am, and so it gives me the opportunity, but this is not the only profession, for example, that this happens in, where people sometimes, you know, get a real problem. For example, these are actually court transcripts between an attorney and the attorney's witness.
Okay.
Attorney. Now, doctor, isn't it true that when a person dies in his sleep, he doesn't know about it until the next morning? Doctor, did you actually pass the bar exam? Attorney, the youngest son, the 20-year-old, how old is he? Witness, well, he's 20, much like your IQ.
These are actual transcripts. Smart aleck replies.
One of my, this is even better. Attorney, she had three children, right? Yes. How many were boys? None. Were there any girls? Your Honor, I think I need a different attorney. Can I get a new attorney? Attorney, how was your first marriage terminated? Witness, by death. And by whose death was it terminated? Witness, take a guess. I think these are just great. Attorney, what was the first thing your husband said to you that morning? He said, "Where am I, Kathy?" And why did that upset you? My name is Susan. Attorney, can you describe the individual? He was about medium height and had a beard. Was this a male or a female? Well, unless a circus was in town, I'm going with male. Oh. Attorney, Doctor, how many of your autopsies have you performed on dead people? Doctor, all of them. The live ones put up too much of a fight. I think they say really. This is. Doctor, before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse? No. Did you check for blood pressure? No. Did you check for breathing? No. So then, is it possible the patient was alive when you began the autopsy? No. How can you be so sure, doctor? Because his brain was sitting on my desk in a jar. Attorney, I see, but could the patient have still been alive nevertheless? Doctor, yes, it is possible that he could have been alive and practicing law. All right.
Okay, Tom.
One more.
Okay.
Attorney, all your responses must be oral, okay? What school did you go to? Witness, oral.
Oral Roberts University, maybe.
No, just oral. All his responses has to be oral. So he says oral. Oh, these are really good.
Okay.
But it wasn't a misunderstanding so much why Esau had to forgive Jacob. Give us the story. Why was Jacob in trouble with Esau?
Oh, because you remember, was it last week we talked about how
Jacob's family.
Jacob was conniving to get his brother's birthright.
Yes.
And he got so angry with him when he was denied the blessing, the birthright, he was so angry he was out to kill him.
Yes.
I mean, Jacob actually had to flee for his life. And he ran off to live with his relative Laban for 20 years. The sad thing is he never saw his mother alive again.
You mean Rebecca?
Rebecca, right.
Yeah, that's correct.
And he didn't see his brother for 20 years.
He did end up marrying somebody.
That's right. In fact, two wives.
Yep.
Leah and Rachel, whom he really preferred to marry.
Yes, but somehow Leah, under a veil, you couldn't recognize Rachel?
I don't know. Must have been some wedding reception, I suppose.
Or they had really big dresses or whatever. Yeah. You know.
Heavy veils.
Yeah. What we're saying is that he thought he was marrying the one he wanted, but when the veil was lifted, it was the other one. And then the father said, well, 7 more years and you can have Rachel.
Right.
And so he had Rachel. Now, I learned a couple of things that I had either forgotten. I know I read them because you read the whole Bible when you're at the sim. But it was kind of interesting. Why did Laban chase after Jacob and Rachel and Leah? Do you remember that?
Well, they were, for one thing, he was taking with him, of course, all of Laban's grandsons.
Right.
You know, the whole family. So he was just leaving. And he didn't know when he'd ever see them again. But there were also some household statues,
idols,
household idols
that Rachel had stolen.
That's exactly right, and he wondered where those things went.
Yes. So when he finally overtook Jacob, the two discussed Jacob's departure, but they searched in vain for the stolen idols.
Right.
They never did find them.
No.
And we're not told what happened to the idols.
Well, we're told where they were hidden.
Where were they?
I believe it was it Rachel or Leah that sat on top of them. Rachel.
Yes.
Sat on top of him, covered him up with her skirt, and he didn't look there.
No. And Jacob, of course, decries the unfair manner which Laban treated him. And so they made a covenant together, and then Jacob goes ahead to the promised land with Laban's blessing. Now, I don't know. For the longest time, I used to think that wrestling that had occurred when he was on the way to that land.
On the way to returning to his brother?
No.
You don't think it is?
No. I used to think it was on the way when he was going to the land of Laban.
Okay, what's your explanation now? See, I think he is on the way, isn't he?
No. He's leaving Laban and going back to his brother.
Oh, well, of course. That's what I meant. Yeah. He's returning to his brother. Did I say Laban? No, his brother Esau.
My point was, for the longest time, I thought it was on the way to Laban's that he had that dream.
He had the dream of the ladder. Jacob's ladder that we talk about?
Yes.
He had that dream on the way to Laban's.
Oh, good point.
That's the dream he had.
I knew he had a dream.
This is the
ladder with the angels going up and down.
Right. How awesome is this place? This is the house of God. This is the gate of heaven.
Yes.
And then on the way to see his brother is where he had the dream. I beg your pardon, where he wrestled, where he had the wrestling match with this mysterious visitor.
And who was this mysterious visitor point of view?
Turns out to be the pre-incarnate Lord.
Yes.
God himself.
Jesus himself.
Yes.
Yes. You know, this really gets mysterious.
Sure.
That Jesus didn't come into the flesh except through the Virgin Mary, but then he's fighting in the flesh.
He does appear. He makes certain appearances. We call them theophanies in the Old Testament. And this is one of them.
Yes. And do you recall another time that Jesus did that?
Where he appears in the Old Testament?
Yes.
Well, the burning bush.
And another time where...
The fiery, cloudy pillar.
He actually was in the flesh.
Oh.
Because he had a meal.
Oh, yes. When he appeared to Abraham.
Very good.
With two angels.
And those two angels also ate also.
Yes.
So they have been given a flesh to eat at
That's
that
right.
point. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
Yeah, that you get all this. You are talking about Genesis chapter 32, and I think we really need to read this to get this in context, beginning with verse 22, because he's crossing over the ford of Jabbok, and he sends them over the brook. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now, even though we're reading the English, the word man in verse 24 is capitalized.
Right.
Which means God.
It was God, of course.
Yes. And when he saw that he did not prevail against him, now you got to get the he's and the him's right. Who wasn't able to prevail against him?
When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob.
Yes. You see, the original doesn't say that. It says, when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him.
Right.
And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. He said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Now, Jesus is asking Jacob to let him go.
Right.
And Jacob says, no, not until you bless me.
Right.
He says, what is your name, Jacob? And then he says, this is a really important verse, verse 28, because it's the verse where the name Israel comes about.
Right.
You want to read 28?
Yes. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed.
And therefore, what does Israel mean then?
Israel means he strives with God, or
it's
or
actually
God strives.
Literally, Israel is prince with God. Remember, El is on the end.
Mm-hmm.
El Shaddai.
El is God. Right.
Yes. And so it's prince with God. And I'm always trying to figure out, in the Sunday school lesson, it's referred to as God's fighter. So I guess there can be a number of understandings from that Hebrew.
Yeah, I've got Israel means he strives with God, or God strives.
Yeah. And Jacob asked him, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, what is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed them there. Now, isn't that interesting? God doesn't give Jacob his name.
No.
When's the first time his name comes about?
Well, when Moses
That's right.
stands before the burning bush.
Exodus chapter 3.
I am.
I am who I am. Yahweh, we think,
mm-hmm.
although we're not sure what the vowels are. And a mistransliteration is Jehovah.
Right.
You know, because they get different vowels in there. But be that as it may, in verse 30, he calls the name of the place Peniel, which means
face of God.
Yes. Because, read the end of verse 30.
So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered."
Yes. So he recognizes that that was God.
He had wrestled with God, right?
See, this is where faith comes through. Now, what can we make about this? I mean, what is the significance here of that wrestling? I mean, how do we fit that in with the Christianity, the faith, etc.?
Does it have anything to do with wrestling with God in prayer? You know, let's remember he was very anxious about meeting up again with his brother Esau after 20 years. He remembered how his brother Esau wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, he put his family and his kids on the other side of the river for mm-hmm. protection. And he was afraid. He was very anxious about meeting up with him again. He didn't know whether he'd kill him or not. He had sent all these gift flocks and herds ahead of him to soften him up. And I would imagine, just as he wrestled with God, so God wants us to wrestle with him in prayer.
I'm not going to say no to that, because there's plenty of places in the Scripture. But I'm going to say something and then see if you can get the tie-ins here, which is kind of interesting. Is in this particular struggle, it ended up with a sore hip. But there was another struggle that ended up with a bruised heel.
Yes, that's right, bruised heel, the cross.
The cross.
Cross, of course.
You know, one of the things we say is that the people in the Old Testament, particularly Moses, Abraham, they were kind of forerunners of Jesus. And Jesus became the new Moses.
Right.
He became the new Israel.
Israel reduced to one, right.
Yes. So also here, I think this prefigures that God is a fighter and that he's going to fight for us. And he's going to end up with a bruised heel, but Satan's going to end up with a...
crushed head.
A crushed head, yes. And what's really interesting, Jacob, if you'll recall, his first fight was in the womb.
That's right. Yeah, he came out of the birth canal tripping up his brother by the heel.
That was the first fight. Then you have this one where... So the first fight, he grappled in the womb for the family birthright. Here now, he's struggling with God for a heavenly birthright. And then God struggles for us for our heavenly birthright.
Right. Yeah, that's...
Is that interesting?
It is interesting.
That the blessing of Abraham running through his family, including Jacob, etc., to David, is always a struggle. And it prefigures, therefore, what Jesus was going to go through. And it's kind of interesting, there was a big prayer that Jacob asked God about, when he realized that his brother was coming with
400 men.
400 men.
That's why he had to be scared.
He had to be scared. What I find so interesting, and this was kind of the theme for today that I want to go into more, is he sees those people coming. He knows he's got the blessing from his father.
Right.
And yet he's really scared, as though it appears that God might not be keeping his promises. And so in the promo, I was mentioning how often we might imagine that God doesn't keep promises to us. I mean, there's all kinds of situations where that appears to happen.
Yeah.
And so what is the antidote to that? That's what I want to talk about when we get back from the break, as to what the antidote is when we're out of sorts with God.
Go to his promises.
Well, we want to wait, I said.
Oh, okay.
Till we get back.
Okay.
Because I got more attorney jokes. No. We don't want to hear attorney jokes. Okay. We won't hear attorney jokes. How would you so far do this with Sunday school kids then?
I'd tell the story. And, of course, you might have to review a little bit.
Yes.
As to why he's afraid of his brother Esau.
Yes.
And recall, you know, why Esau was so angry at him and explain that, you know, Esau is coming with him, 400 men, and how he's concerned for his wives and for his kids. And he's afraid that he's going to, not only he's going to be killed, but also his kids and his wives, his families too.
Because he didn't bring any soldiers with
him. No.
You know, Laban, you know, he let them go.
He's got his sons.
Right.
But 11 against 400 is no match.
No.
But that, I'll tell you what is the challenge a little bit.
Go ahead.
Is talking about the mysterious wrestler.
Yes.
Who explained to the kids, you know, I don't remember when I was in Sunday school, I don't remember the Sunday school teacher ever explaining that was, you know, the pre-incarnate Christ, Christ appearing in the Old Testament. I always kind of heard that he was an angel. Maybe he said he was an angel of the Lord, but I took that to be a regular angel. That's the challenge, is to work with these youngsters and to explain that in a way that they can fathom, if not completely understand it. If anybody can understand it.
Yes. In verse 30, he has come to a conclusion, I've seen God face to face and my life is preserved. See, that's the only face that we can see of God, is the face of Jesus.
Face of Jesus, exactly.
You see the face of God the Father, and like one of my callers once told me, that I was in my bedroom and Jesus appeared and talked to me, and I said, no, you be toast. Because he's now in his
glory,
yeah. You know. I was joking a little bit, because I imagine if God did want to appear to somebody in the flesh, he could, except I'd be hard-pressed to understand why, since we have his holy word.
Right.
But I'm not going to argue with people who think they see visions or whatever. You know, God can do anything he wants. But the fact of the matter is that if you want to know what God is like, you always need to be revealing him in Jesus Christ. It's only in Jesus that you see the true attitude of God toward us.
And then the other difficulty of that is, I think little kids can't imagine Jesus wrestling with you.
Yes.
You know, they think of the good shepherd who cradles that little lamb in his arms, and they don't think of him as a wrestler, somebody's trying to wrestle with. So those are some challenges.
Even less likely do they often think of him as wrestling with Satan.
Right.
Which really is what the cross is all about. But when we get back from the break, we're going to give a little insight as to what Jacob does in light of his fear. And I think it'll be a good example for us also. Please stay with us through the break.
Sign on at 7 Wednesday morning. Wake up with inspiration, information, and morning essentials on KFUO Radio. Registered dietitian Connie Dickman will join us. We'll hear a devotional thought from Lutheran Hour Ministries. Visit with Pastor Nabil Noor. Reverend Carlos Hernandez will join us, representing LCMS World Relief and Human Care. Dr. Bob Weiss, professor of bioethics at Concordia Seminary. Plus, we'll check with some of our churches in Texas and see how they're coping with the fires.
Johann Sebastian Bach once called music an agreeable harmony for the honor of God and the permissible delight of the soul. We believe the great Lutheran composer got it right. That's why we're continuing the tradition of timeless classical music and sacred classics online at classic99.com. Check us out, the greatest music in the world, streaming 24/7 on classic99.com, a ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
With a Focus on the Family Minute, I'm John Fuller. If you can't see eye to eye with your spouse and you're tired of constant fighting, Doctors Les and Leslie Parrott suggest you try seeing things from another point of view.
About 90% of the struggles we have, conflicts we have in marriage, can be resolved if we do nothing else but but put ourselves in our partner's shoes and see that issue.
Yeah, think
from
about
the other
that,
side.
Julie. I wish we could give it as a wedding gift. It's empathy, you know?
Right.
Imagine if before you got married, you could get this little white box that had your name on it, and you'd open up in your new home, and it was a box of empathy, and it just ran wild throughout your relationship. It would revolutionize. We wouldn't have a divorce rate anymore. Mm-hmm. Empathy is that powerful.
The more you understand your mate's personality, interests, past hurts, and future goals, the better you can partner with him or her in your marriage journey. Find more ways to resolve relational conflict at focusonthefamily.com/marriage.
At The Y, it's about more than sports and working out.
It's about making my community better.
Living a healthier life.
Spending time together as a family.
It's where I go to learn and play after school.
The Y strengthens communities.
By helping kids reach their full potential.
Encouraging healthy living.
And inspiring social responsibility.
Get involved. Find the Y near you. Visit YMCA.net.
An active lifestyle. A community of close friends. A continuity of care. That's what you'll find at the Senior Living Communities of Lutheran Senior Services. Check out Breeze Park in St. Charles, Merrimack Bluffs in Baldwin, Laclee Groves in Webster Groves, Richmond Terrace in Richmond Heights, Hidden Lake in North County, and Meridian Village in Glen Carbon, Illinois. They are all part of the Lutheran Senior Services Network of Quality and Value. Learn more at lssliving.org.
So Jacob is appearing before Esau. He sees the 400 men, and I guess he's shaking in his boots, right, Pastor Smith?
Oh, I would imagine so, yes. But, you know, time heals a lot. And these two, you know, it's kind of a beautiful picture. When they finally approach each other, they hug each other and they weep.
It's kind of interesting, you know, what he does here. He saw Esau coming with him with 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants, and he put the maidservants and their children in front.
Yes. No, he walks ahead.
Well, no. Verse 2. In front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came nearer to his brother. And Esau ran to him to meet him, embraced him, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. What does that remind you of?
It kind of reminds me of the Joseph and his brothers.
Well, that's good, yeah.
When they wept. Of course, that comes later. But let's see, what happened earlier like this?
Well, I'm actually thinking it happened a lot longer after this. I'm thinking he embraced him, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. And I'm talking about
it reminds you of the problem. The story of the prodigal son, lost son.
Isn't that the same words?
Yes.
Yeah. Only it's not Esau, it's the father who does it.
The father going out, right.
Yes. And who are these with you? He said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. And Leah came and bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near and they bowed down. And he said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? These are to find favor in the sight of my Lord.
The gifts he's talking
about. Yes. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. No, please, if I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. And he says, take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. Now,
it's really something, isn't it? How time has a way of softening those.
Was it time? Okay, then my question to you is: why did he bring 400 men? Is it possible?
Well, what you're getting at is God melted his heart.
Yes,
very, very possibly. Yeah.
Well, that's the only way.
you're right. If you take those 400 men, a good point. If you take those 400 men as the threat that they seem to be,
yes.
Yeah, God really turned his heart.
Yes.
I had never thought of it that way. I always thought it was simply a sentiment, you know, an emotional outpouring. You know, they haven't seen each other for 20 years. They're still brothers. They were in the womb together. The mother of both of them is gone. I always took it to mean that, oh, you know, you see somebody after 20 years and you just forget those angers. But yes. I think you've got an excellent point, Tom. I've never looked at it that way, but this was God answering prayers.
And the prayer, and that's what I wanted to get to, because you had kind of hinted at it ahead of time, is in chapter 32, verse 9. Would you read that prayer?
Chapter 32, verse 9. Okay. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and of all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good, and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.
Okay. This is the answer.
He holds God to his promise, doesn't he?
No. See, that's how I think.
Kind of like wrestling, though. He holds God to his... You have promised to do good to me.
Okay, I want to...
You have promised to make my offspring as like the sand on the seashore.
I want to really break that sentence down, what you said. Okay. And I think you'll... Jacob holds God to his promise?
Isn't that what God wants us to do when we wrestle with him in prayer, is hold him to his promises?
No, we don't have to.
Well, of course.
Well, no, that's a big
point.
But
we do... It is appropriate in prayer that we recall all those promises that he's made to
us.
Now that's my point. You know, when you pray to God, you recall all those promises that he's given us. Go ahead.
Who are you recalling them for?
Yourself.
Yes, not God.
Well, of course not. God doesn't have to be reminded of his promise.
But in every other religion, he does. That's a huge difference between Christianity.
I agree. Every other religion, you better remind them, and it's useless anyway.
No. See, this is the point now. When somebody is under the gun and they think God is not keeping his promises, is the problem with God that needs to be reminded?
Yeah.
Or is the problem with me that I forgot?
That you forgot his
promises.
Yeah.
It's like the Lord's Prayer. Everything you say in the Lord's Prayer, he's already promised to you.
Right.
There's nothing new.
Prayer is really, it's not changing God's mind. It's not reminding him. It's conforming us to his will is what prayer is all about.
But this is really critical. When you're in a situation, well, it even says it in the Greek really clearly, verse 7, so Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Why? Because he had forgotten God's promises, or he didn't believe them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So...
Even after he just wrestled.
It's kind of like a... No. The wrestling hadn't taken place yet.
Oh, you're right. You're right. That's later on.
Yes.
Absolutely. Good point.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's something you can help me with. Why did God wrestle with him?
Well, for one thing, to give him a new name.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, wouldn't make any sense to give him a name if the name didn't mean anything.
But now, there must be something, because now the chosen people are called Israel.
Yes.
In fact,
the church is called Israel.
Yes.
You and I.
If the church is called Israel, I think it makes a big difference if Israel means fighting with God or peace with God. You see, and literally, I'm sorry, not peace with God, Prince with God.
Prince with God.
In fact, one of Jesus' parables again, he goes on and finds treasure. And what is the treasure? Is his people Israel.
Uh-huh, hidden in the field.
Hidden in the field, as Jesus says in the
in the parable.
John prayer, you know, that he has to reveal these people. The point I'm making here is a pastoral one, is you're always going to run into people in the congregation who have been really hit by the law in such a way that they're out of control, they don't know what's going on, and they think God isn't keeping their promises. And they'll say it somewhere like this to you, what did I do to
deserve this?
Yes.
You know, why are you punishing me?
Exactly. That's somebody who's forgotten his promises.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So if you think about when you go to a hospital and you're going to have a prayer, regardless of what the situation is, whether somebody going into surgery or somebody having a baby, the prayer will only be effective insofar as you repeat promises from the Bible.
Well, that's why I said before, we want to recall those promises. It'll only be, now say it again. You mean to say the prayer will only be effective insofar as you recall the promise? What you mean is if it's prayed in faith.
No.
Faith in God's promises.
No, no.
You're saying that you have to verbally recall those promises?
Give me a prayer that's effective without a promise from God. Okay, somebody's going in for surgery, cancer, say, and they're really worried about it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't help but say you are a good and gracious shepherd. You're going to be with us through the valley of the shadow.
Well, there's three promises, you know, right there.
Right, that's right. I mean, you're right. I can't imagine praying a prayer without recalling those promises.
No, it's impossible, because the only thing that is a means of grace is the
gospel and sacraments,
which are promises.
Right.
They're not historical events.
Right.
If you go in and say, what are you worried about your cancer surgery? Jesus died on the cross for you. Well, so what, Pastor?
Yeah.
telling the history doesn't help at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the key to this Sunday school lesson. We've got to find the promise. And the promise is that the struggle that we're having, God takes over, wins the battle, and gives us all the benefits. That's what's happening here. In fact,
God takes over the wrestling match.
That's right.
He wrestles with Satan.
That's correct.
And crushes his head on the cross.
Yes.
And he's the one that reconciles man to man, brother to brother.
With the words, it is finished.
Because he's reconciled us back to God.
That's right. You see, yeah, that's well said. 2 Corinthians. The problem isn't that we have to still get God reconciled to us. You see, if we had to get God reconciled to us, we would be trying to get him to recall the promises. But instead, the prayer is for us that we recall his promises.
Uh-huh.
And just by recalling them, which is a way of preaching, it's not a word for preach, it's
right.
Recall,
right.
Is the Holy Spirit works in that and creates a comfort within us that we didn't have before the pastor walked into the hospital. I remember one particular situation. A lady was going in for surgery. She wasn't worried about the surgery. Is it called claustrophobia?
Claustrophobia.
When you're afraid, like going in an elevator?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you're small spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of times these people go for these CAT scans. You know, they go in the tube.
Yeah.
They're afraid of that because it's so they get claustrophobic.
She was shaking because surgery was on the third floor and she was on the fourth floor.
And she was going to have to take an elevator ride.
Yeah,
is that right?
Oh, she could not stop shaking.
No kidding.
About it. And I use Psalm 23 that has nothing in it about elevators, you know, and some other passages from the New Testament. And There was actually a calm that came over her.
Uh-huh.
And when I met with her after the surgery, she said, you know, when I went in that elevator, I just didn't have any fear at all.
Uh-huh.
Now, part of that could have been, you know, they give you
the aesthetic, right.
Yeah, ahead of time, too.
Right.
And from that day forth, she was still scared of going in elevators. She couldn't go in them.
I guess so.
But normally you'd think she'd be out of it. Now.
No,
she was still afraid. Because that's not a lack of faith. That's just a phobia.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have different phobias.
Right.
Like, I don't care how much you say to me, I am not going up on a 80-foot ladder leaning against a building to get on top of
man.
A roof.
I got to have something around me.
Oh,
I don't mind heights, but I got to have something well around
exactly
me.
Exactly myself, too.
So, no, with me, it's spiders. I can't stand spiders.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My wife They laugh at me all the time.
Well, you'll be glad to hear there's probably, I know your house, at least 1,200 in there.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, they say that you swallow about 20 spiders or so in your lifetime during the night.
I never heard that.
With you, it's more like 80.
Yeah, I sleep on the floor. No, beg bugs, you know, because they stay away from me.
Bed bugs.
No, we had a problem. I killed I was catching squirrels. And caught 19 squirrels, 4 possums, and Louise caught 4 raccoons all at once. Mm-hmm. She went to the garbage can, looked down, there were 8 eyes looking up at her. They had jumped in, you know, because they got the top off. And then I take them. I don't put them to death. I put them in a preserve for their animals. In fact, we caught the four baby raccoons. We came back the next night. The mother got caught. So I took her to the exact same place the babies were, and they were all up on the curb waiting. Hi. No, they weren't, but I'm sure she could smell them and find them. But be that as it may, what happened, I had a van, and I had put it in the back of the van, and then our cat had gone to the vet for something, and within a week was filled with fleas.
Ah.
Now, it took Louise about 2-3 months to get all the fleas out of the house. So I know what you're talking about. I mean, if God just made spiders aggressive rather than passive, like when you turn a light on, they hide. You know, they don't want to really be around you that much. So you don't really need to be afraid of them. But so I'm watching a movie, and a guy steals some money given to him by another crook, and he opens it up, and he gets bit by a mamba, one of those snakes.
Oh boy!
That caused death within 30 seconds. Oh, so that's I'm not.
Snakes is your fear.
That's another one. Yes, heights and snakes. The worst thing would be climbing up onto a roof filled with snakes.
Filled with snakes. And snakes curling up around the ladder, right?
Oh yeah, I get up there quick, but then they start coming. Oh, forget this, because we just pictured hell. The Twilight Zone had one of those, that whatever the person was afraid of, that's what they ended up with, you know. So I would say to the devil, oh, I hate ice cream. Please don't give me ice cream.
And especially not White Castles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, White Castles. Ooh, I can't even taste them. But maybe the devil knows better. Oh, this is silly. But what's not silly is... That's why we're to read the Bible. I was telling people in Bible class, I said, you're not coming to Bible class or church to go to heaven. You're already going there. But what you're trying to do is get your head to catch up with your heart. Your heart has perfect faith, but your head, it gets it all mixed up. And so if you're afraid, it's because you haven't been at church enough to hear where the promises are. And a good sermon will put people at rest and create a comfort.
That's right. That's right.
And that's my view on evangelism now. I've been doing this for about 2 weeks, talking that evangelism, you need a personal encounter with someone for the purpose of spiritualizing what's going on in their life. Like, a good example was what Michelle Bachman did when the tornado and the earthquake hit. She says, what does God got to do to get your attention? And she was mocked for that, but that's precisely what was happening.
Right.
There's nothing...
we can expect to be mocked.
When we stand up for the word of God and witness like that. Exactly. But she was hit so hard, she almost appeared to pull back, you know. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really mean that. I said, yes, you did. You know, somebody said, well, where was God when the tsunami hit? And God says, well, I was in your tears and your cries for help. I was there with you.
Well, what does that mean, you know?
Yeah. The fact of the matter is God, I believe most Christians believe not that God or Jesus Christ is omnipresent, but that evil is omnipresent. And they tend to forget that Christ is the one who's omnipresent.
Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world.
That's a good verse to bring up here. So the bottom line for the Sunday school kids is I always would tell them, you know, you're going to come up into situations where you're just going to wonder, you know, where is God or what is he doing or this sort of thing. And the way to help you is to recall for you the promises that he's made for you. And also recall the promises he hasn't made. Like, for instance, if you have a puppy that's sick, there's no promise that he's going to get well. But there's a promise that whatever happens, he'll never do it in such a way that it overcomes your faith.
Right.
You know, he'll provide a way of escape, and who knows what else, you know, he has in store. And it's hard with kids. With adults, it's not hard at all. But how many times have adults gone through a situation where they wish something would happen and it didn't happen, but it worked out far better than they ever expected? You know, yeah. Kind of thing. And if you look back in your life, boy, that's, you know, I can think of all kinds. When I was at the SEM, I took graduate courses because I thought I'd like to be a prof. You know, I always had fun doing that. And the breakup at the SEM took place, et cetera, and other things happened, and I had just taken a call. I actually was on the call list. And
To be a professor?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
Dr. Charlemin had called me. But when he went to the Board of Regents, there was one gentleman who had known I had just taken the call to St. James, and he said that would be unfair to St. James. And so by one vote, I didn't get the call. And I often wonder what I would have done, because I had only been at St. James for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
When that had been thought about. But now I'm really glad I see that I wouldn't be on the radio. I'm almost confident. And although I wouldn't have got to know you. Well, there are some advantages. There are some disadvantages. But can you imagine you, me, and Krause not knowing each other? with all the stuff that God has done with the books that he's written?
Oh, I know.
And put out and such. And so, you know, God has a plan. And he promises, you know, he's going to take care of it. And he'll call the shots when it's over.
Tom, should we give out our
If anybody
our
wants
numbers?
To call, I don't think we've given them out all day. We're
yeah,
having
we have
so
it.
Much fun. 505-7850 or
1-800-730-2727.
But don't bother calling because we only got 5 minutes. You know, and we're trying to wrap up here. Oh, if you want to call, don't hesitate to do so. We're trying to wrap up for Sunday school children. That a lot of times, because they're still children, they get everything for free. It's kind of like the commandments. The way Exodus 20 is written, I like putting it this way. Mom and dad are there with the kids. I'm your father, I'm your mother. Therefore, you will always have a free meal. You will always have free clothes. You will always have free transportation. And that's exactly what the commandments are. The commandments are gifts given to us. Now, the promise God made to Jacob, and Jacob reminds himself of that promise also in praying to God, namely that these things you had promised, you know, God. And it's really a reminder more to Jacob. And therefore, there's no way that Esau was going to kill him at that point, because then the promises wouldn't be coming true about... Because
he's the promised. The promised Savior must proceed through his line.
That's right.
If he's killed, that won't come to be.
Yeah, normally it wouldn't. Although Abraham believed if he had killed Isaac, God would have brought him back to life right then and there.
Right.
Because he was still going to come down the mountain. But there doesn't appear to be any promise there. Abraham could have that because he realized Isaac had come from a dead womb.
Yes. Yes, good
and
point.
So,
Sarah.
Yeah, well, the point is actually made by the writer to the Hebrews.
Right.
Knowing that he had come from a dead womb, he realized that God could bring him up from the dead.
Now, again, I think you mentioned that the tense used for those commandments are future indicative. They're not imperative, they're future indicative, right?
Well, they're imperfects.
Imperfect.
In Hebrew. Which means that they're
not complete.
Exactly, because you have to have me as your God. Now, see, here's what we would say to people today. How do you know God's your God? Because you're obeying the commandments? No, because I fought with you at the cross, for you at the cross. And by the way, with you, because of your sin. And then when the words, it is finished, I am the Lord your God. Therefore, when you have that kind of relationship, you won't take my name in vain. You'll remember my Sabbath day. You'll honor those I put in authority over you, your father and your mother. These are kind of spontaneous things. It's kind of like when you and I first got married. We wouldn't go anywhere without our wives, you know, White Castle. Now it's been a while and we go everywhere without them. But, or they go everywhere without us. Yeah, I'll go on these weekends. Where's your wife? She's enjoying herself.
It's to shop while you're away, right?
Well, actually, she loves hearing Jim Belts, this Bible class teacher, too. You know, and then she's with the kids at church. Yeah, the grandkids, boy, I think...
They really...
They take priority.
Take a lot of attention, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, but that's wonderful. But it was our anniversary last week. I think we've been married 4 years or something. But anyway, we went out with, I was telling you, the Nortons, and went out and had a great meal. And it was really, I mean, we almost had to switch waiters twice.
I'll bet so.
Now,
you wear them out, don't you?
Come on over to the store, because we've got a whole bunch of books there just for $1. In fact, one of our listeners came last Saturday, and he introduced himself to me, and I said, oh, what you here for? He said, I heard you say they were $1. And sure enough, he went back there and spent about half an hour looking through them and bought some. So these are books we've been given.
Uh-huh.
And then we have, of course, regular books. We've got furniture, all kinds of things, and funding goes to the missionaries in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzia, as well as Good News magazine. And if any of you would like a copy of the Good News, just phone me.
It's an excellent magazine.
Yep, 1-877-CMS-1962, and I'll send you a free one. Or if you come to the store, I'll give you a free one. And by the way, we have every issue up now, all 38. And that's really good. So there's 38 topics.
You've got them all available at the store.
Yep, every one of them. Yeah. So, we're going to be going to the news here pretty soon, it looks like. We've been having a little problem with the news, but Buzz is in here to work things out, and we've got about 15 seconds left for you to tell me.
Can I invite him to Prince of Peace?
Yes.
Prince of Peace, 8646 New Sappington, just south of the Watson-New Sappington Road intersection. You can join us on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. for service, 9 a.m., or you can come Saturday evening at 5 p.m.
Thank you very much, Pastor Mark Smith. Hope to see you next Tuesday. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105, or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.